Okay, so far we yesterday we have gone through two lectures, and this morning I will start with the third lecture, discussing about the Higgs deconstruction and the Higgs extra dimension. And after that, this fourth lecture I will discuss the phenomenology, including the analysis of precession constraints for general Higgs. For general Higgs models, and some discussion for the signals which recently have called a lot of attention and interest. So lecture three, I will cover the following issues. The first thing, I will give you a general classification for the Higgs-based models in terms of the deconstruction. It turns out the deconstruction provides us with a very generic and convenient and powerful way to understand the symmetry breaking in Higgs series and various types of model constructions. The deconstruction turns out can provide a unified treatment. And then we will see how the geometric Higgs mechanism, which, as I explained yesterday, generates the delayed unitarity violation and the conversion between the longitudinal KK nodes and the fixed component of the gauge field through the Kaluza-Klein equivalence theorem. I will try to formulate this thing more rigorously on an arbitrary 5D background and see how the Higgs theory and the geometric mechanism can arise from a deconstructing, a very general deconstructing treatment. And the third issue is I will then discuss how the symmetry breaking arises from deconstructing and all the boundary conditions, which usually is sometimes somewhat of confusing, which otherwise we would found the Higgs theory like 2 years ago. And then there is some confusion about how to break the gauge symmetry by boundary condition from 5D, and how to impose proper boundary conditions to realize such breaking. There are some confusions, like based on the orbifold breaking. And then I will show is that based on deconstruction, which gives you a very clean way to try to understand the 5D gauge symmetry breaking in terms of the 4D, and how to formulate those, and how the boundary conditions can automatically induced rather than imposed by hand. Finally, of this lecture, I will give you a very explicit discussion to give you a feeling on how the delayed unitarity violation in a Higgs-less model can be realized. So, as I mentioned yesterday, for the Higgs-less theory, it turns out there are some real problems. It's not so hard to accommodate precession data, because the precession data mainly concerned with like S parameter and the T parameter with by removing a Higgs particle. We add just one more free parameter, but it turns out, as I showed you yesterday, it's easy to accommodate. But then there's a problem with the Higgs, a fundamental Higgs removed without a semi fundamental Higgs in the standard model. Then the longitudinal W and Z scattering has to violate unitarity at the scale of about 1.2 TeV. And therefore, we don't have, in the usual 4D, four-dimension Higgs model, we don't have a consistent perturbative theory up to, say, about 3 TeV. So even at LC, we know such a theory has to be modified by including the new physics. And the Higgs-based model provides us a minimum modification. So we are very modest using a bottom-up approach. So we have all the standard model gauge bosons and fermions discovered in the standard model. And then, but we don't have a perturbative theory without Higgs hasn't been formed. The Higgs-based standard model in 4D can accommodate precision data with just two effective operators. But then the question is how to maintain such a Higgs-based effective theory up to, say, 3TeV, cover the LC regime. Higgs-based theory provides such a minimal modification by giving you, even without Higgs, we allow it to provide the spin 1 state to unitarize the WW scan. So this is a fundamental approach in parallel to the usual Higgs approach, which uses spin 0 states to unitarize the WW scan. Once this new modification, this is a minimal modification, once this is added, so we would expect also the signals to be covered at the around the TeV regime, at the LHC and the linear collider regime, the collider pulse, the upcoming also linear collider. I will show you later on in the fourth lecture about some precision. Even the energy of the linear collider is quite limited, but we will see because of the high precision. Now I will start with. I already gave you this graph diagram yesterday. A generic Higgs model, Higgs-based Moody construction with the arbitrary product with I call GA with the n plus 1 copy and the GB n plus 1 copy. And you can add many other product groups. But for the electroweak center breaking, it's enough to consider we have a branch of the SU2, GA equal to SU2, and a branch of the U1, the shaded bubbles. I also explained to you yesterday on each side, this actually you can, it's not precisely a simple discretized fixed dimension because we can generate many other five geometrical configuration by folding the Moose chain. So now in this Moose formulation is on each side we have a gauge group and with the independent gauge, arbitrary gauge coupling as you like, and also a link field. I will also give you explanation, definition on Lex transparency, which is a U field contains the Goldstone boson for each link, and the F1, F2, and so on are the Goldstone decay constant, characterize the center breaking between the product groups. So now the next thing I would like to demonstrate is all the 5D Higgs series can be derived from the deconstruction with proper folding of this Moose chain and with also the induced boundary condition, which will show you how the in 5D continuum theory the center breaking 5D center breaking can be generated, but it is in a gauge environment. One thing I like to emphasize is this formulation is essentially is a 4D nonlinear gauged sigma model with many gauge groups. The only difference is I have more than one gauge group. And everything is formulated in a gauge invariant way, even though it's in the nonlinear realization if without a Higgs boson. So from that diagram on my previous slide, I can give you many other many possible constructions as many as you can imagine. The simplest way is we have say this is only SU2 without the bubble. So we have the SU2 n plus 1 copy with the n plus 1 independent gauge couplings and the FDK constant. It turns out I actually around the end of yesterday, I think the second talk, I showed you a deconstruction diagram like this. So we have the SU2 n plus 1 copy, and the link field will ensure a breaking of the center of the gauge group down to the diagonal SU2. So in this construction, if you take a continuum limit also, you will find you have a set of three gauge bosons which remain massless. In 5D, that means we have the massless zero modes. And this diagram is meant that we have actually n plus 2 sides, but only the first n plus 1 side are gauged with the SU2 and n plus 1 independent n plus 1 copies of the gauge group. And the last side is engaged. We only have the global SU2. So as a result, this is our four-dimensional quantum field theory, nonlinear gauged sigma model. And you will find the gauge group, the n plus SU2 n plus 1, now is completely broken to nothing. So this corresponds to, if we compare this with the standard model, it corresponds to we take the U1 hypercharged gauge coupling to be zero. So in that case, we have no mixing between the U1 hypercharged gauge boson and the W3. So we have the W and Z to be degenerate and with the massless U1 field. That is, it's there is no so in this is a Pauli model of the electroweak center breaking, but it contains all the essential issues about the 5D electroweak center breaking. If we take the continuum limit, so we have the three degenerate massive W, say with the mass about 8 GeV and the massless photon, but there's no Weinberg mixing, corresponding to take the Weinberg angle to be zero. And the third one is a more realistic case. So let's say we want to gauge the last side with the U1. I use the shaded bubble denotes the U1 gauge field. And in this case, it's easy to say, ending this U1, then the U1 group will break with this whole thing, with the last link, so such that the residual group, gauge group, is the U1 electromagnetic group with the massless photon. And this link field will induce the mixing between the U1 hypercharged field, usually called the B mu, and with other SU2 gauge field. And this will give you a realistic Weinberg mixing to generate the Weinberg angle and gives you the W and Z mass splitting. And in the continuum limit, this U1 will essentially becomes to be a Brent term because it will localize as the X5 equal to L. And this actually is the simplest model we can imagine for the Higgs-based electroweak symmetry breaking exhibiting the delayed unitarity. So in later on, I will spend more time to demonstrate basically most of the features about the Higgs-based model just using this. If we want to include some like the W and Z mass splitting and have a realistic analysis for phenomenology. But if you really want to understand all the conceptual issues, this move is enough. Okay. And furthermore, recently has been proposed by many authors in five dimensions, many different variations of the Higgs-based model. For example, this one is the earliest one proposed by Chabasaki, John Turning, and the collaborators. And what they want is to have in 5G to have the 2 SU2. If we take a continuum limit, this is indeed 2 SU2 in 5G, and also the U1 in 5D. And then they have the walked diagram, which is just a special case by taking the proper arrangement of the link field and the gauge coupling. And what they have is SU2L cos SU2R and cos U1. And on this brain, if you take a continuum limit, they have SU2. This side in a continuum limit is what they called the Planck brain. So at the higher scales, they want to have this U1 B minus L breaks with the SU2R. Combined with SU2R, breaks down to a diagonal residual U1 hypercharged gauge group. And then at the TeV scale, the U1 hypercharged breaks with the SU2L down to the electromagnetic. In this construction, they found it attractive originally because you can first thing ensure the T parameter to be zero, maintain a custodial SU2 symmetry. This is one of the major motivation for that model, and it is based on the early attempts. It's the same group structure by Ramachandran and the collaborators. They have been trying to study the Ramachandran model in 5D, but with the fundamental heads, because the original motivation for the warped model is to solve the hierarchy problem. So in the warped background, you don't have to remove a hex. Ramachandran studied that model, and they found by this construction you can maintain delta rho equal to the rho parameter equal to 1. And then you have the fundamental hex and the warped background solve the hierarchy problem. So they found that model to be nice. But if you really want to remove the fundamental hex, and then you want to use the boundary condition to break completely the SU2 cross U1 down to the U1 EM without a fundamental hex. And then the major issue is the phenomenological constraint, whether you can maintain Z2BB bar and generate the realistic fermion mass splitting and so on. So anyway, so that's a long story. So that model has been extensively studied, and the many people have tried to make it realistic, make the STU, the S parameter and the T. So another issue is S, how to make S parameter to be small, even though T parameter is zero, approximate zero, because of the custodial symmetry. These guys are adding brain terms and many variations on this construction, and then found it's also not that easy to reduce the S parameter if you just have a localized fermion on Planck brain and the TeV brain. It's not so easy to also accommodate to make a small s and accommodate unitarity delay at the same time, which I will explain to you later on. So what we found, if you use the construction, if you unfold this deconstruction diagram, you essentially come back to a linear moves, what we call the linear moves, which is a branch of SU2 and U1. You just fold this moose at the middle of this SU2 chain one time, and the second time at this intersection between the SU2 and the U1, and you essentially reproduce the model by Saki and Turing and so on. So if we can perform a generic analysis for the deconstruction, then we'll expect all our results, those general features, can apply to these models without exception. So this is another variation. If we don't like too many U1 in the bulk, and we can just have a brain term, have just one U1, we gauge just one U1. At one side of the extra dimension, and therefore in the continuum layer we have the 3 SU2 plus the 1 U1 brain term, and of course if we take properly take the link field and gate coupling here, we can also produce brain term at this point and also here and here. So as much as you like, depends on how you generate the 5D geometry. This is very generic. Now this is even simpler model with the 2 SU2, which have the nice feature to maintain the T parameter to be zero, approximately zero, and also have just a 1 U1 on the brain, and it also gives you the desired the electroweak symmetry breaking. And there are some a lot of errors in past years try to accommodate precision data. One major issue is how to, if you only have localized fermion, how to gauge the small s, which is what I will explain in more detail in my fourth lecture. But conceptually, really this is what all you need. With that Nyamuz deconstructing formulation, and we can have all those 5D models. So we found it's very, very interesting, very general, and very simple. So we just now writing down with that Nyamuz I mentioned earlier, we can write down the general Lagrangian, the Lagrangian Yamuz term for every side, and we have k is equal to n plus m. We have k plus 1 link field, and just sum them up, and this is the Q11 derivative for each link field. So the advantage is now we have, essentially you can view this, if you take, in general, if we arbitrarily take the GJ and FJ, we can produce any geometry, and even without geometry. But if you take the proper pattern of the GJ and the decay constant FJ, you can always realize any 5D geometry as you like. So this can be, in that case, can be viewed as a lattice size, a fixed dimension, but there is no boundary condition imposed by hand. And I will show you how this boundary condition can be automatically emerged by taking a proper continuum limit. And we have, at each side, we have a set of the gauge bosons belongs to the gauge group GJ. And then we have the nonlinear link field, which is defined as, here we have the Goldstone boson pi J. For the SU2, it's 3 Goldstone bosons. For the U1, it's only 1, and the decay constant. And now if we worry this FG, that is essentially produced the warped random syndrome 5D background as this spatial case. And in the original random syndrome model, the GJ is taken to be equal. But now if you take the GJ to be different side by side, then you can get position-dependent coupling that has been discussed. Actually, there is some transformation, the so-called conformal matrix. Even with the flat FJ, you can do a conformal transformation and then generate the position-dependent coupling. But the five-dimensional analysis does not depend on which coordinate you choose. So I would just stick with this most formulation. For the random syndrome, the warped model, which is essentially corresponding to vary the FJ, the decay constant. And now we can also vary the gauge coupling GJ, which will give you the position-dependent coupling. I will show you what this corresponds to in five-dimensional language on my lecture transparency. And with this general FJ and GJ configuration, we have also much more flexibilities to accommodate the experimental data, because we don't have to confine ourselves to some specified geometry. And then will give us more freedom to search for the viable models in 5D. And n goes to infinity, we have the 5D continuum limit, and with also all the possible Brian terms and the induced boundary conditions. That's my next. Now I will first thing I will show you how the continuum limit can be realized on an arbitrary 5D background. So this is my Mu's deconstruction definition with the link field UJ. If we view this as the lattice size, the fixed dimension, and therefore we discretize the x5 into x0, x1, x2, and so on. And then the link field here on my previous transparency can be redefined as a Wilson 9 on a small infinitesimal interval from say xj minus 1 to the xj 5. Because this is only one lattice spacing, and this is equal to the lattice spacing A times the relevant to the GJ and the A5 at the position XJ5. So the lattice spacing now is defined as A equal to delta XJ5, so the spacing to be equal. But then, because we have the position, we have the general varied the gauge coupling GJ side by side, so we can reparameterize this in 5D, which corresponds to the kappa G. In the continuum limit, the kappa G will be a function of the X5, and the G5 will be the S, a universal 5D SU2, for example, SU2 gauge coupling, which has a dimension minus 1/2. And this is the square root of Lattice spacing, so this is dimensionless, and now we see the dimension for the G5, and the kappa is the dimensionless function, depends on X5. And the decay constant now can be factorized as the universal F, which has a mass dimension 1, and then a function HJ, which will be a function of a continuous function of the X5 in the continuum limit. And now you can also rescale the AJ, that's the site gauge field, correspond to a 5D gauge field, which will depend on X5, and with a probable combination of the gauge couplings such that the A hat will have the dimension of the 5D gauge field. Now, starting from the previous Lagrangian I showed you, what people were not so familiar with this Lagrangian, you just do a fundamental derivation step by step. You get Lagrangian, a 5D Yamil's Lagrangian of this. So now the capital I and J will run from the Lorentz index from 0, 1, 2, 3 to 5. So this I and J will equal to 0, 1, 2, 3, and 5. The 5 is the fifth component. And you have the metric. Because on arbitrary 5D, we have it's not flat. So we have the metric field. So you will see that this metric will, the varied gauge coupling and the varied decay constant in a continuum limit, which gives you some dimensionless function kappa and h, which will modify the 5D geometry. So the 5D geometry is essentially determined by the interaction, by the gauge coupling and the decay constant, the breaking pattern. So this is the general 5D background. If you take the kappa equal to 1 and h equal to exponential minus k times x5, that is a random sampling background. If the kappa and h are both equal to 1, then it's a flat 5D theory. And now we try to perform a general 5D quantization of this 5D Yamil theory. It's straightforward to add actually U1 also into 5D. So now we have the familiar oxide gauge fixing, and the gauge fixing function is more complicated and is designed in such a way such that the A5 and the partial mu A mu term, the mixing term, will be cancelled out, so the propagator will be simple. And then by doing BRST transformation, and you can derive the partial for both ghosts. And with those, because so far, as I showed you, we're starting with the gauge invariant nonlinear gauge sigma model, and then we take the continuum limit. And naturally, you would expect by doing those quantization, we will say we have all the gauge symmetry from the 4D, because it's a continuum limit. And therefore, all those water Takahashi identities will remain. The boundary condition I will show you how those can be derived, and supplemented by the boundary condition, you will find the 5D action is invariant under the general 5D BRST transformation, and therefore, for example, that gauge fixing function will satisfy a word identity. And now we want to see what's the consequence of this identity in 4D. So therefore, we do a Kaluza-Klein decomposition in terms of the KK field. So the A mu, this A mu hat, the 5D field, now is decomposed into the 4D KK fields, VN A mu. I use V to denote the 4D KK fields without the hat. Now it runs from the 0 to infinity in principle, but eventually it will be cut off at some point due to the unitary violation. And this is the corresponding expansion for the A5, and we see the 5D wave function I call the chi n here, and this is the chi n tilde. And now we can amputate those external lines. This phi hat loads some possible other physical fields rather than gauge boson. And we found an identity, amputated identity, S matrix identity for the F bar, which I call F bar. F bar actually contains two terms. The one term, this is the mass term for the KK field, and the VS is the scalar polarization, is the unphysical scalar polarization of the 4D KK field, which has the polarization K mu over the KK mass MN. And it is related to the longitudinal polarization by this equation up to a small correction. So in a high energy limit, this term is small, and we can derive the KK equivalent theorem, which will eventually connect the physical longitudinal scattering amplitude to the ghost boson V5 amplitude. So this is what we do. So yesterday I showed you in the flat case how this for this equivalent theorem. And now I showed you for arbitrary background, because the general gauging Weibull formulation of the deconstruction and with a consistent realization of the 5D continuum limit with the induced boundary condition, we can still derive a very general identity. And as a consequence, which gives you the 5D equivalent theorem. And actually, this identity always shows you how the geometrical Higgs mechanism can occur in 5D independent of any specified geometry for arbitrary geometry. Because this means you have amputated S matrix element, and with any other possible physical fields, you do the calculation, and what you found is the scalar component VF and the fifth component V5 are confined. So everywhere external line, if you have the V5, which you can add the VS together, and the contribution to S matrix element is always cancelled, it's zero. So this means this is actually a S matrix realization of the Higgs mechanism in a geometrical way, which means you will convert the scalar component of the KK longitudinal of the KK fields, its unphysical spin one KK fields in 4D, convert that into the A5. So this actually is the eater mechanism. So you convert this to VS, these two are confined, so both of them are unphysical. And as a result, the KK field, I call VN mu here, obtain a mass, as you always say the mass parameter is given here. And become to be a physical component, and which is the third component of the massive KK field. So this is a way to show you how the geometrical Higgs maximum indeed occurs at the S matrix element level. And then finally, the equivalent theorem shows you that if you take the high energy limit, actually you can calculate the longitudinal amplitude in terms of the corresponding Gaussian boson amplitude. And this provides you a very powerful way, as I will later show you, is the energy cancellation on this side, which is automatically ensured without imposing any sum rule. The reason is that this is the scalar amplitude. I already showed you yesterday on a very general background with simple power counting. The V5 S matrix element is at most of the order of the E to zero, is a constant, at most the leading order is constant. So there must be cancellation on the left hand side. And therefore, this cancellation ensures you, because this is cancelled down, this is the gauge amplitude, so cancelled down to the constant, which is proportional to the gauge coupling square, the KK gauge coupling square, is a constant, gauge coupling square. And therefore, in a compactified 5D theory, arbitrary background, you would generally expect the individual longitudinal KK scaling amplitude is unitary. The effective unitary, eventually you will have unitary violation, is because you have many KK states, you have the KK tau. You couple them together, then you find the unitarity has to cut off the theory at some point. With a finite number of KK states to maintain a perturbative theory up to certain cutoff scale. Okay, now I will illustrate how the boundary condition can be derived. It has been puzzled for some time, even including us. about 3 years ago, what we found is indeed with the deconstruction, we can realize all those symmetry breakings and the delayed unitarity. The issue is how when you go to 5D, you realize the boundary condition, what you want. Is unlike the ordinary, most has been before the Higgs-based theory emerging. The most discussed case is this Lyapunov boundary condition, which corresponds to the deconstruction formulation like this. As I mentioned, you have the SU2 with N plus 1 copy. It's so obvious. In this construction, we have the residue SU2 gauge symmetry. So therefore, we have the masterless zeromers. And therefore, the W and Z in this construction remain masterless. It's unbroken. So you need some other mechanism to generate W and Z masses. And correspondingly in 5D, you realize this breaking pattern by two Lyapunov boundary condition. And this two Lyapunov boundary condition actually naturally emerges by analyzing the mass matrix for the KK for the deconstruction model. You using that Lagrangian the nonlinear gauge sigma model term with those link fields I mentioned to you early transparency, and you derive the mass matrix. Later on, I will give you some example. And the consistency to solve the eigenvalue equation requires as the boundary side, the x0 and the x minus 1, the one there, has to satisfy this relation. If you take a continuum limit and with the proper rescaling I showed you on early transparency, this essentially gives the partial 5a mu hat at x5 equals 0 to be, this is a standard Lyapunov boundary condition. Okay. Actually, this is more extra dimension. This gives you the extra dimension on an interval without any orbifolding. This is much more, to my understanding, is much more simpler way to formulate. You don't have to impose different type of the Z2 party and so on, which is more complicated to generate the desired center breaking, which sometimes is very confusing. And with this simple formulation of the 4D nonlinear gauge sigma mode, what you will find is take a continuum limit, you get the five dimension on an interval. And without extra complication of the orbifolding, which has, and we have two boundary conditions emerged from the consistency of the deconstruction theory. And this is the example how the most behavior, and this is the way which will give you the massive W and Z, even though it's degenerate because I haven't gauged this global symmetry. But it gives you all the essential feature about 5D gauge symmetry breaking. So in the continuum in 5D, we would expect we have the SU2 5D, five dimensional gauge group, will be broken by the boundary conditions. And indeed, we analyze the mass matrix for the gauge field, all those gauge fields in this Mohs construction. If you write them down and you do write and analyze the eigenvalue equation, and now we found it's different from the previous deconstruction. On this side, on the right hand side, the boundary side, because now we have the global group, and we have to impose a condition due to the diagonalization of this mass matrix. The xn plus 1, the eigenvector has to be 0. So in the continuum limit, this means the 5D wave function is vanishing at the x5 equal to L. This is the Dirichlet boundary condition, which indeed breaks the SU2 5D to nothing. And on this side is a standard Lyapunov boundary condition, and there is no symmetry breaking. And in this deconstruction, then now you see why the Dirichlet boundary condition does give you the desired breaking. And in addition, you can also analyze the mass matrix for the Goldstone bosons. And it turns out you can analyze the dual of the Mohs A and B I mentioned earlier, which means essentially you switch the FJ and the GJ. If you switch them, and now we get this dual Mohs. So it turns out like in my Mohs A, if I do the dual Mohs and the two boundary sides is no longer gauged. And for the Mohs B, and this side is ungauged and this is degauged, essentially because my switching of the gauge coupling and the decay constant. And it turns out the mass matrix for this dual Mohs is exactly what we have for the A5 Goldstone boson. for the pi, Goldstone pi mass matrix derived in ordinary moves, it's more intuitive to look at dual moves because it's easy to understand how the boundary condition for the A5 emerges. So now for this case, now you can already guess you will get the two Dirichlet boundary condition. So that is precisely what you usually have in 5D for the A5. If you have the Z2 parity, this basically means the A5 is odd in Z2, and the A mu is even in Z2. But now this treatment actually is more general. We don't need orbifold. We just impose the consistent boundary condition, which ensures the 5D action to be invariant even at the boundary. And now for the Moose B is more interesting. Now we see on this side we have the Dirichlet boundary condition, and now the Neumann boundary condition becomes more non-trivial. It's not the simple, unlike the flat case, you have the partial 5 A5 to be 0, but now we have the H function, the H, as I mentioned earlier, which arises from a long flat decay constant. So like in the random Sandel model, you will have the non-trivial H function given there, which is the warp factor. So the A5 Neumann boundary condition is more non-trivial than what naively expected. And similarly, you can also derive this. Now it's much easier to guess. Based on a more systematical analysis, now we see on this side, the left-hand side, x5 equal to 0, we have the Neumann boundary condition for the a plus, a minus, and also a3. And on this side, remember, we only gauge the u1. So only the a3 satisfies the Neumann boundary condition. And but the a plus minus, because it's engaged, that gives you the Dirichlet boundary condition. And this pattern will give you a realistic electrical accept breaking in 5D. And similarly, you can also divide for the two SU2 chain case with the one brain term given here with that folding. So on this side, you will see you have this combined Neumann boundary condition, which corresponds to you have a diagonal SU2 on Broken Hill. And on this side, you have the partial A5 mu, the left-handed SU2 field satisfied Neumann boundary condition. But this side, you have the condition like here, which is very similar to here. So in the most, in 5D, you have to work very hard to derive those complicated wave function boundary conditions. But in the most construction, now we understand why this boundary condition here is essentially the same as here. There's technically speaking, there is no much difference. Conceptually, this is essentially the same thing. So you can straightforward write down boundary condition for this side. Okay, so now I will give you a more general analysis, because in 5D, give you any particular model, you have to do a hard calculation, doing KK decomposition and integrate out X5 and derive all those couplings and so on, try to do a scaling amplitude, try to derive the Feynman rule and calculate any physical observable. But now, with the deconstruction, we can examine the unitarity delay based on a very general form. So what we see is that, and also another advantage is that we don't have to reproduce any particular 5D geometry, and we can have arbitrary TG and FG configuration. So what we observe from here is that the delay of the unitarity violation is essentially a collective effect due to the participation of in electrical extent breaking from many gauge groups. As I showed you, why we need n plus one copy rather than just one copy, which is the Higgs standard model. So the many copy of the gauge group means that many gauge bosons will participate in the WW scaling, for example, the gauge boson scaling. As long as the corresponding signature breaking scale are as high as you wish, the FG, if one of the FG is as low as this one, and then you would not expect a unitarity delay. Because that smallest FG will eventually determine how the electrical weak symmetry breaking is realized. the electrolytic breaking is realized. But now if we have the, all those FGA contribute to the circuit breaking, and each individual FGA can be high, so that's why you can realize you can delay the internal violation. I probably have more detail later. So now with that deconstructing Lagrangian, I do the mass diagonalization and I transform that Lagrangian, interaction Lagrangian, into the mass eigenstate. So effectively, I have those mass eigenstate KK fields, I would, with the quotation mark, which is a mass eigenstate gauge field, starting from the zero modes up to some higher modes. And this is the gauge eigenstate. Actually, the second line I denote in W is my mass eigenstate. So with that effective gauge coupling, G3 in mass eigenstate and G4, and with the GJ here, or the GJ square here, and those R those R matrix are the rotation matrix for diagonalizing the gauge Bolzhong mass matrix in deconstruction, which is given here. So MW square is n plus 1, cos n plus 1, we have, which is real and symmetric. So we have the orthogonal rotation to diagonalize this. And you can do more calculations. Accordingly, you can also diagonalize the Goldstone boson mass matrix and do the rotation R tilto. And derive, say, we have the four Goldstone boson interaction here with G4, which is the individual V squared divided by Fj squared with those rotation mass matrix, rotation matrix. So if you say if we want to have the unitary delay, if the G4 is equal to 1, this is the standard model without hex, is a nonlinear sigma model. So now we have many gauge group contribute. Now we have the n not equal to zero. So those contributions showed you that the FGA, each individual FGA can be much larger than Wei. If that is the case, this one will be coupling will be highly suppressed. Will be suppressed by 1 over n plus 1. Will be suppressed by n if n is large. And which means if you calculate the pi scanning amplitude, this is one formula given here. If you analyze the low energy four Fermion interaction, you will find the collection of the 1 over V squared, the Fermi constant, electric simple breaking scale determined by the relevant the decay constant. So if the n is large and the many Goldstone boson link field contribute, and then you can realize a physical 1 over V squared with a large F individual K constant. And F is large, and you can have a much smaller effective Goldstone boson coupling, suppressed relative to the usual Higgs standard model. So this term is a contact term. If you take N to be large, this is suppressed by 1 over N. And then there is additional gauge boson exchange diagram, which is actually in the pi scaling with the STU channel gauge boson exchange, which will give you the constant term. But that constant term is what you remain in your physical final physical results, which will determine precisely how the unitary can be, how much the unitary can be delayed. If you take a continuum limit, this term vanishes, because I showed you yesterday there is no self interacting for A5. A5 is from anti-symmetric gauge field strength, F mu 5. So this term will disappear in the continuum limit, but however, this term will survive, which gave you valid contribution. Okay, so you do similar, this is a general formulation for the WW scaling, and this is a corresponding Goldstone boson scaling, and you have contact and the STU channel. The difference is that in the WW scaling, you have the long-trivial energy cancellation. And eventually, these two amplitudes are equal, as I will show you more explicitly. The first thing I want to demonstrate is that we take the simplest model, like in figure A, I have SU2 to the 4 plus U1. P equal to 1 means I locate the fermion, the left hand fermion at the site J equal to 1, and also the hyperjet, the coupled with the hyperjet at the J equal to n, 4 plus 1 site. So now if you, this is for figure B, and this SU23 equals C1 is for figure A. And now I showed you how the unitary violation is occurred based on the formula I gave you on previous transparency. This is the unitary gauge calculation including everything. Now what I want to show is if I have a geometry, even though I have a finite end, but if I want to mimic the 5D flat geometry, I would expect to have say G1 equal to G2. And also F1 to, because I only have three gauge group, I have F1 to be Zut 3 times V. But then I have to satisfy another condition, because the sum of the inverse square of this F constant has to be equal to the 1 over V square. So I don't have all those FJ to be completely arbitrary. So if I take this the flat configuration, this is the dotted line I got when I vary when I vary F2. For F2 to be equal to F1, I think it's 0.43 is somewhere here. You see there's the a maximum around there because it's flat. All those F are, if they are equal, they are as large as possible. So they will delay the unitary as much as you can. Originally, our naive expectation is that if you probably would expect that there is a sharp peak there because the 5D geometry gives you the maximum unitary delay. But it turns out it is not the case. As long as the F, those F1, F2, and F3 are comparable, and we have approximately about the same unitary delay around the 2 to 2.5 to 3 TeV. So therefore, as long as the purpose to realize the unitary delay, there is no real need to realize the exact 5D geometry. Even though all those Fs can be unequal, as long as they are comparable, essentially it's a collective effect. So it doesn't matter whether you have the exact 5D geometry. So what we have here is with very different variation of those F configuration. See here in the flat case I have the G1 equal G2 equal to 4, and in the long flat case I have the some random input. G1, G2 are 3 and 4 are not equal, and now I have F1 varies this red, green, and the blue color. In three values, so from 0.4 to 0.8 TeV is much different, except the first one is much different from the flat configuration. And we have a lot of situations like the green curve and the red curve, which realize the unitary delay as much as you would expect, or even better compared to the flat case. So the conclusion is that in order to realize the unitary delay, which is essentially a collective effect of the many gauge group participating in the electroextended breaking around the same scale, which are much higher, are significantly higher than the usual vacuum expansion value, which is equal to 250 GeV. As long as those FJ are much higher, you can realize unitary delay. And there is no need to really mimic a flat, a 5D geometric configuration. And this also phenomenologically allows us more flexibility to accommodate experimental data, because I don't have to, unlike the naive expectation, we don't have to enforce like F1, F2 to be exactly equal. That's what the, because in the origin analysis, you found that the energy cancellation is exact in 5D. If you don't have the 5D exact 5D geometry, then you don't have exact energy calculation. But however, with the long geometric setting, we don't have exact energy calculation, but we have E square term suppressed by 1 over N. So as long as N is significant, we do have unitary delay. This is another example showing for a different model. This is about some work in progress. This is for simplicity. I want to show you some general features. So this is a setting. I want to examine the different the unitarity violation as a function of the central mass energy of the WW scalar. So this is a partial wave. So your partial wave equal to 0.5, which is the place the unitarity has to be violated. And I do this by varying the different n. So the first curve, the black curve, is the Higgs's standard model with n equal to 0. And you see the unitarity is violated in this particular channel about 1.7 TeV. And then we can increase the n. And the red curve is for the first NW to be 0.7 TeV. So if we increase the n, we see that the unitarity is delayed further and further. So it depends on how large the n you choose for the one channel. And the blue curve is showing the similar analysis for the three values, n equal to 2 and 5 and 15, for the first W, the W prime, to be 0.5 TeV, the 500 TeV. But then it turns out you will see the delay unitarity is very sensitive to the first NW. The reason is that if you calculate the asymptotic behavior of the partial wave, which is because of the T channel contribution, which gives you the term like this. So it depends on energy only logarithmically. So if you increase your W1, this becomes to be much smaller, and then you have to this becomes much smaller because it's powerly proportional to MW1 squared. If you decrease MW1 from 0.7 to 0.5, then this is much, much smaller. And in order to realize the unitarity violation, the S has to be much larger because it's logarithmic dependence. That is why I only changed 200 GeV here. We found, we compare for 15. The 700 GeV 15, the maximum delay is given here. And now, for the 500 GeV, we have a delay up to 10 TeV. And another numerical result, I'd like to give you some feeling. Now, for the N plus 1 equal to 5, okay, we input like a gauge coupling G here to be around 4, and the F1 to be about 0.87 TeV. And we have a unitarity, delayed unitarity violation at about 4 TeV. I think this is the fourth curve given here. So you see, we have the first KK, to be 0.7 TeV, and the second one to be 1.3 TeV. But it's very important to have your first KK to be below 1.2 TeV, otherwise you would not realize to unitarize the W, because the Higgs standard model already breaks the unitarity at 1.2 TeV scale. In order to unitarize WW scale, you have to have some new KK states which enter into the W scaling at the scale below the traditional unitarity violation scale. So it's important to maintain the W prime to be below 1.2 TeV. Here is an example of 700 TeV. And then another thing is you see the coupling, the triple gate bottom coupling, the two zero W modes, the light physical W, couples to the KK states. It's decreased very fast. So the W prime coupling is always another order of magnitude, more than order of magnitude, smaller than the standard the coupling, the zero mode coupling. The zero mode coupling. So n ranges from 0, 1, 2, 3. So the higher the KK states, even though the larger the mass, but the coupling is much more suppressed. So in practice, the delayed unitarity is largely ensured by the W prime. The W2 has some small contribution, but it's much, much smaller. This is another example, explicitly I like to show you how this happens when you take the continuum limit. The first diagram, now I consider this particular channel W plus minus, go to W plus minus, and the zero modes. This is the process which can be tested at LHC and the linear collider. Corresponding pi scan, So it turns out for the I also plot the partial wave unitarity as a function of the root S. And you see that for the n, okay, so figure is n equal to 2. I take the small n, okay, with the small unitarity delay. And MW1 to be 500 GeV. So the sword, the red curve, the sword line, is the exact unitarity gauge calculation. And the black curve is the pi scaling. So the equivalent theorem in this case is realized very perfectly. You almost see no difference for the difference of these two amplitudes. And then, because it's much easier to understand in the Goldstone boson amplitude because there's no energy cancellation. So I calculate the contact Goldstone interaction contribution to the pi scaling and the T-channel contribution for the plus minus, go to pi plus minus. And you see, for the small n, the contact diagram is large, actually. Eventually need to dominate the unitarity violation, and you combine both of them, and this is the final result. And the T-channel which is much smaller in this range, and remains relatively flat. But however, if we take a large n like n equal to 15, that's much more like a continuum extra dimension. And you see that the contact term now become to be much smaller. This is what I showed you, because the contact term is the usual E squared divided by V squared term, is a Lonely theorem. In a naive Higgs standard model, that Lonely theorem term will eventually break unitarity at the scale of 1.2 TeV. But now it's much smaller because it's suppressed by 1 over n. And now it is eventually largely the unitarity violation of a Fourier theory is dominated by the T-channel contribution, which is constant term. And that contribution is going to include the S-channel Z, and also the S and T-channel Z, and also the double prime and the double two prime, and so on. And eventually you find a delayed unitarity about 10 TeV. Yes. Yeah. So you say we have a bunch of the this is the general formula, T channel, U channel, and S channel, and so on. So for the plus minus channel, we only have the T channel contribution, and these are the couplings between the from here, from two Goldstone boson and one W. To summarize, I have tried to convince you that all the Lowing 5 D-Higgs theory so far can be formulated from the construction consistently in a gauge invariant way. And the geometric Higgs mechanism and the KK equivalent theorem can be formulated by taking the continuum limit of the deconstruction on arbitrary 5D background. So the energy cancellation and the unitary delay and so on, all those things can be realized in 5D, you know, for any geometry you can imagine. And in general, I also point out the unitary delay in Higgs theory generally can be formulated as a collective effect without resorting to any Lowing 5D geometry. So this also gives you much more degree of freedom for model building and for accommodation of experimental constraint. And also we showed you how to understand and realize the 5D gauge symmetry breaking in terms of the Euro well understood and familiar 4D nonlinear gauge sigma model symmetry breaking. So now we try to construct and realize the 5D gauge symmetry breaking in terms of the origin. We give you an origin of this 5D gauge symmetry in terms of the deconstruction or lattice formulation. And there, all those gauge symmetry breaking and the boundary conditions can be understood in a very simple way, which we are very familiar with. And with this approach, and it seems to be quite exciting because we have a very general formulation to approach the Hexis theory with the delayed unitarity, and therefore to maintain a perturbatively sensible effective theory up to a couple of TeV, say 5 to 10 TeV, and within that range, which will fully cover the LHC and the Planck linear collider search, and give you some new physics, which is the most generic future here is the spin one state, which actually is the only modification I have so far. It's the minimal modification, and it can be found, and it's the signal will be very clean and to be distinguished from many other models. And my next lecture will give you some more details about how the phenomenology goes. Okay, thank you.
I have a question. You take the model, the electric signature bracket can be realized through the boundary condition. So you iterate that broken by boundary condition. My question is this kind of boundary condition is consistent with the condition you induce from the construction?
The answer is yes. So all what we found actually, I'll give you many examples here. For example, this is the simplest case with all the sites to be gauged. If you take a container nature, this is the 5D SU2 theory. With the boundary condition, the low in-mind boundary condition, and this boundary condition usually is realized by an orbifold S1 over Z2. You get two. Actually, this is the first model we did in the calculation of 2001 in 5D compactified 5D Young Niels. We use that SU2 over a circle S1 over Z2 by folding one time. You get this two boundary condition. It's more troublesome to try to, because orbifolding is more connected to the string theory, so many people like to use it. But as long as the concern for the symmetry breaking pattern, the boundary condition more clearly tells you how the symmetry breaking is realized. And this is precisely what the people found for the 5D compactified SU2 with massless zeros. And now if you go to the next case, yeah. So this again, if you have the another simplest example, actually we have that. Oops. Yeah, this is. Yeah, which we we have found this 3 to 4 years ago. So if you take the continuum limit, because we analyzed that moose at the very beginning, but we didn't derive that boundary condition until sometime later on. Indeed, we found this boundary condition because we were confused by those orbifolding, how this can be consistent. But in the deconstruction formulation, this is so obvious. But indeed, if you take containment limit, this is also what in some special case, what the Chabasaki and the Turley model, they were, if you take out the U1 gauge coupling, this is the simplest realization of the SU2 breaking with the Dirichlet boundary condition.
Okay, so besides the
boundary. So it's perfectly, everything is consistent with what the boundary, with what those guys working very hard. For example, I showed you here, this 2 SU2 case. So those complicated stuff, you work very hard by doing variation of, there are different approaches like variation of the 5D action and require the surface time to the term to be vanishing at the boundary. Or you require adding some boundary hits and then finally take a large wave limit, try to derive those boundary conditions. But here is, we don't have to include any boundary hits. Eventually, you want to take the wave to go to infinity. You just analyze the construction and the consistency of the matrix diagonalization in containment limit, which gives you precisely what you needed for breaking the 5 decay symmetry in this way. So it's SU2, L equals SU2R breaks. Then there's another brain term which eventually needs to break into the U1M.
Okay, thank you. I have another question about the electroweak symmetry correction. Besides the boundary condition, is there any other way to do that?
The approach I'm giving here is that in deconstructing language, we know there is only one way to break gauge symmetry, because that's the link field we have. It's a nonlinear gauge signal model. If in 4D, I give you n plus 1 copy of SU2, and you ask yourself how you break that that product gauge group, then you need those bifundamental link field. And that's the nonlinear gauge signal model field. And of course, you can add a linearized symmetry breaking pattern, which means it's not nonlinear gauge signal model field. You have the bifundamental hex, and then you can also break it. But now, if you remove the hex, that's nonlinear gauge signal model field. That's the one unique, probably the only way we know how to realize the breaking of the product group by the bifundamental field. For example, if I take the n to be zero, so I only have these two sides, which is essentially the standard model. I just formulate SU2 cos U1 with that Higgs boson, the Higgs doublet. But now if you want to remove the Higgs, you integrate all the Higgs, and you have a non-linearized SU2 cos U1, which I discussed yesterday. This is a non-linearized, is a Higgsless 4D standard model. But now we have a product group. So therefore, you just have the more, you need more link field, bifundamental link field, to break the gate group. So this, then you take the continuum limit. So you might have different ways in 5D, probably inspired by string theory, I'm not sure. But this bottom-up approach, mathematically, it is rigorous because this is a lattice formulation. We have proposed that you understand, you can understand and construct the 5D gate symmetry breaking in terms of the 4D, well understood symmetry breaking pattern in 4D. This is the standard nonlinear gauge sigma model breaking. That's the only way we know how in 4D you break the symmetry. But fortunately, because this formulates a lattice formulation, you take a continuum limit, those link fields, the Wilson knot, will eventually generate what you needed in 5D. So we found this is really a attractive and a nice future. Without bothering with the U way, like the string theory at Planck scale, all what you need is a bottom-up approach, and you see how those symmetry breaking can be realized consistently in terms of the 4D formulation. So there is no mystery for the higher dimensional gauge symmetry breaking. Everything here is in the lattice formulation is the standard nonlinear gauge sigma model breaking pattern by fundamental in field.
Right.
That is another formula, standard formula, which this term. Right.
Where the black method, value breaking limit, and breaking comes from?
Right. So, for example, those F are Planck link field. But turns out I have the P because this is derived from the low energy 4 fermion interaction. So if you put the fermion on both boundary and the P is equal to zero, and therefore you have 1 over V square equal to 1 over F1 square, 1 over F2 square, and so on. So you see all those bifundamental link fields participating in the electroweak circuit breaking, which breaks down to finally the electroweak.
This means that electroweak symmetry breaking in this formulation is really spontaneous.
Right. Precisely. Thank you. So another thing I like to emphasize in this nonlinear signal model formulation, because another big confusion actually we also had earlier is in 5D, many people say you have the boundary condition, so it's explicit breaking. But now this deconstruction provides you a nice way try to understand the 5D gauge symmetry breaking in terms of the 4D spontaneous symmetry breaking. So that's why you still have the Higgs G geometric Higgs mechanism. Otherwise, you wouldn't expect the Gaussian boson eaten by the longitudinal KK modes. So now we are very satisfied with this observation, because now why in 5D you have the explicit you have the exact energy cancellation and the conversion between the fifth component and the longitudinal KK modes, and this whole stuff occurs consistently because you can realize the geometric Higgs mechanism consistently, and that geometric Higgs mechanism becomes almost obvious in the deconstruction case. There is no mystery, and that has been well understood. And then you take a continuum why naturally you would expect that. And yesterday in my second lecture, I mentioned you we did have the partial. If we just apply the naive Lee Krieg-Sacker bound for the standard model, Higgs this WW scaling unitary bound, which is proportional to the 4 pi mw divided by g. If you apply that naively to 5D, you will get some inconsistent results by adjusting the size of R, the extra dimension. You can arbitrarily lower down the utility violation scale. But this actual situation is not the case. It is because when you take the continuum limit, there is a spontaneous symmetry breaking and the Higgs mechanism, which ensures energy cancellation, which makes the real difference as far between the four-dimensional Higgsness model with only one SU2 in comparison with 5D. Yeah, so maybe there are more implications can be explored, but conceptually, I think the construction provides you a conceptual clean and technically very convenient, because we don't have to work on the model one by one, as I will show you next. In next lecture, is if you calculate STU parameter, it's much, much simpler if you want to do one time for all those models, rather than you pick up a particular boundary condition, do decomposition and calculate coupling and mass spectrum, and for the precision constraint, then it's extremely complicated, and your final 5D explicit results were model dependent one by one. And with this construction formulation, we can gain some general features to understand why you have a large S parameter and how you can get it to be small.
I would like to make a comment. Since you already have this formulation,
right.
So you can simply extend it to six dimensions.
Yes.
Then you can, in your Lagrangian, you have the F by 6 field, which is anti-symmetric in A5 and A6.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is just what we already got idea by Akani Hamed, George I. Coleman. What they did is just using a flat.
Yeah, it's a flat.
Right. Now you have arbitrary geometry.
Right.
So you have much
freedom to make that.
Just to make that model.
Yeah, yeah, yes. I think this, yeah.
In that case, you don't have to worry about inheritance because we have this.
In that case, quite like
it. You don't have to worry about how to make one or two things very like.
Yes.
And you have to worry about
flavor change.
How to make the quartic coupling lambda approximately equal to one time.
Equal to the standard.
You put the
Higgs
lambda into one half.
And
then the Higgs mass
is approximately the Higgs. Light Higgs. Yeah. Also,
the
flip in. Yes, yes. In 6D, in principle, we can extend this. In 6D, they only analyze the flat case, right?
Yes,
but I think for arbitrary a decay constant FJ and GJ, even though it's more complicated, but for the finite end, I think at least one can have.
I think that's right.
Right. For if we just do the numerical analysis for finite end, it's not really complicated. But for some analytical formula, it will be more complicated. Mm-hmm. Like I say that like in Ken Lin has a paper which have all the sine cosine. But now it's arbitrary geometry, you would not have the sine cosine eigenfunction. It's more complicated, but certainly those issues can be
because it's not sure that LHC can find a like this or not.
Right.
So if they can find a like this, you can have a like this version.
Yes.
If they cannot find a like this, then this hit less version will be very important.
Right.
So
right. Yes. Actually, this formulation, it's more general than just Higgs's, formulation. Okay. Okay, so now I move to my last lecture. After a long wait, so now I'd like to discuss the precision constraint and signals, some glider signals for the OCL in a glider. Okay, starting with that formulation on my previous lectures, I will give you some basic definition for what we need for the precision analysis. And in comparison with another formulation by Barbieri and the collaborators, the most general low-energy Bohr fermion amplitude for the charge current and the neutral current can be defined in this way. Some part of it, like the S parameter and the T parameter, can be found in a Michael Paskin-Takuch paper. This is that you want to examine, like for the lab experiments, the Z pole. So essentially, you have in the low range, you have the two fermion, delta two fermion. You have the exchange of the W and Z. You can write down that amplitude in terms of this. So we have. Let me explain from here. IA and Q are the weak isospin and the charge of the relevant fermion. And alpha is the e squared over 4 pi, the fine structure constant. And S and T are Paskin-Takuch oblique parameters which parameterize the deviation from the standard model, the new physics. Which are defined from examining the unshear. I will emphasize unshear ratio for the W and Z. For example, if you take the residue, at the Q square equal to MW square, and where you will derive the S parameter at the residue of the two-point correlation function. In the class of the models I discussed on my previous lecture, in this class of the Higgs models, fortunately we have usually very small U. Approximate to be zero. It's much, much smaller than T, for example. So we only parameterize the S and the T. We just drop off the U parameter. In addition, we can have the contact contribution from like the. It's a formula as the universal contact interaction. You might keep in mind that the new physics for that is like the W prime, Z prime change. If they are heavy, that basically they give you the contact interactions like that. But they are universal. They are universal in the sense that they are seen as arising from the effective operators, which are proportional to the current, the GMU dot GMU or the GY square. But they are long oblique, in a sense as they are they representing deviations from the unshear properties of the W and the Z probabilities. Okay. This is another, also has puzzled us for some time. The Barbieri and so on, they proposed an alternative parameterization of the electrical weak corrections to describe the new physics in terms of the universal theory. The new physics now are corrections which are assumed to be in this type of universal series. The new physics can be described solely in terms of the modification of the two-point correction function, correlation functions of the electroweak gauge current to the fermions. And they are defined, unlike the Paskin-Takuch problem, they are defined at a zero momentum. So you see here, cos square equals zero. And they are connected to the unshear parameters we use with that formula. So for example, the Barbieri group always claimed S hat is large. So by S hat is large, if you just realize the small s in Paskin-Takuch formulation, which does not necessarily mean S hat is small, because there are additional contributions, even though the delta 0 and T are 0, for example, if you have a good custodial symmetry. But you might have a universal long oblique corrections, which also is somewhat confusing that S hat, because it contains some long oblique universal contact contributions, which we I think more clearly parameterize as delta, which is defined on my previous transparency. And the T hat is the usual delta 0, and And the W is correspond to that a universal contact contribution alpha delta. And Y is that combination. So if you have the good custodial symmetry, and these two will be vanishing, the two important parameters will be S10 and W. I just mentioned in my previous talk, this is the summary. Now we like to analyze, because by folding this linear moves, we can get many 5D Higgs theory, as many as we can imagine. So we like to just make a general analysis of this deconstruction Higgs theory. And some advantages I already mentioned earlier, and now I want to emphasize with this general FG and GG, and we do have much more flexibility to accommodate the experimental constraints. The mass matrix for the W, the charged and the neutral sector, are given like that. So essentially, you can see how the boundary condition arises. I might make one more comment here. This parenthesis should be removed. So in a Z case, so we have the Neumann boundary condition on this side. But for the W case, because there is a one link on gauge, so we have the Fn plus 1. There is one more term contribute to them. And then you can define, because these are the mass matrix, a matrix, so you can define a matrix propagator, and that will be relevant to the low energy four fermion interactions. For the charged current, like you have here, for the neutral current, you have the J3, J3, and J3Y, and the JY, JY. And now is the issue is how you calculate those things and connected them to the precision parameter I gave you on, at the beginning of my this lecture. One of the good advantage of this formulation is now we can express the propagator by a spectral decomposition in terms of the physical pole, and those residues, the cosine, will be eventually connected to all those couplings. For example, the lightest W, the standard like the W and Z couplings to the fermion law is expressed in terms of this. So the duration for the oblique corrections will be represented in those psi. But now the good thing is now this spectral decomposition is expressed in terms of the physical mass pole. That's a major advantage, very transparent. The electroweak corrections, then with some algebra, you can do the calculations and make a contact with the early definition for the low-energy properties of the W and Z in the low-energy four fermion interactions. And we found ST and delta are given by this, and U is zero, as the order we calculate. And some explanations are given here. The sigma W is essentially a Mohs diagram with the site 0, j equal to 0 included, and with the link j equal to n plus 1 included, but not the site j equal to, not the gauge field on the site of the n plus 1. So I have the parenthesis here, I have the bracket here, and now this is give you, this is essentially the W mass matrix. And the trace gives you the inverse of the MWN square from the from n equal to 1 to n. And then this is the Z. Yeah, I think I should subtract, I should subtract one more term for the zero nodes, for the n equal to 0, for the light W. But for the sigma P and sigma R and sigma M are all defined there in terms of the mass eigenvalue of those certain mass matrix on that Mohs chain diagram. And now with those, you just sum them up and you have the sum rule in terms of the Barbieri parameter S hat, which is given by a formula which requires you to be larger than 1 over MR squared. MR is the mass eigenvalue of this mass matrix, which generally speaking is large. It's large eigenvalue because I have the two parentheses here. So one interesting thing is we do want the unitarity. They say MR equal to 1 is roughly speaking the mass of the W prime, Z prime. Then the unitarity requires this root 8 pi times V is 1.2 TeV. And we do want the W prime, Z prime, as I showed you in early transparency, the figures, to be smaller than that bound in order to unitize. So then this bound requires here to be larger than this number. Unfortunately, with the localized fermion, and this number is large because the Barbieri collaboration did a fate, which roughly requires at the 2 sigma level, the S hat to be smaller than 1 times 10 to minus 3. So that's what happened last summer, and we realized that this is to, actually this S hat is large in many other 5D models, including the Turing and Sagi 5D warped model. This is the generic future because we haven't specified any geometry, including their case, including Brenton, and anything you can imagine. So the S hat is large is a very generic future, and a bunch of others realized later last summer and fall, one major improvement, essential improvement, is try to delocalize the fermion to get to reduce the S hat. There are two delocalization. One is you have all those sites coupled to fermion rather than one. And the minimal delocalization is in addition to left-hand fermion coupled to this SU2 and also coupled the second SU2, and this is the U1 hypercharge field. If you the Stanford fermion. The Stanford fermion. In early transparency, I showed you these results, and many other people, including the Sagi Turing model, they localized fermion on the brain, on two brains. So it's localized fermion, and we further extended that to have the fermion localized in some point of the extra dimension, but it's localized, and this is the general result. So in order to have the unitary delay and then the precision bound is not satisfied. Right. So now you really want the delocalization of fermion. One simplest way is to have a bulk fermion. And in the minimum way, in deconstruction, we don't have to couple, because in 5D, you either have fermion localized on the boundary or have the fermion in the bulk, in the whole bulk. But in the deconstruction, we can realize the minimum delocalization with just fermion, not just couple one side, which couple to two sides of the two SU2. In the deconstruction, there is no restriction on that. You really can do whatever you like to for the fermion coupling. Okay. So now I just want to demonstrate in this simplest model, what is the minimum delocalization. And how the so you see here we have two parameter. This is x0 and x1 sum to be 1. So the fermion coupled to two sides. and also the hypercharge current. So with that localization, I will show you when for example, the X1 is not zero, how we can reduce the S hat to the desired precision. So the charge count allow we have the X1 and XI and XJ sum up from zero and one side for the charge, and this is neutral. And now we go through the whole positive. You get the results like this. So the S hat now, the S now contains the sigma Z, which is the inverse of the Z mass square, KK squares. And plus one contribution depends on X1. And the M tilde here is given by the G0 and F1. So if F1 is large, you can have a large contribution given here. And by adjusting the X1, you can realize the exactly 0S. But still it's non-trivial because S hat is the sum of those things. I missed a delta, a little delta here. So now, because T is zero in this model, and S is zero by adjustment of X1, and then the S hat essentially reduced to the universal long oblique corrections, which is proportional to, is given by this, X1 times this. And now we want to reimpose the unitary bound requires this, the product of this, to be larger than this number. Without delocalization, we have no way to decrease this, but now we have X1 delocalization. So we only need a very mild adjustment for the delocalization, say less than 25%. X1 is more than 1/4. And you can realize S hat to be smaller than this bound. So the precision data is not so difficult to accommodate once you have the minimum delocalization. Okay, so I move to my last part. Try to give you some taste about there are quite a lot of even though we a fully realistic Hexis model, including fermion mass, everything probably not yet finally completed. And many people already jumped to study the collider signals. I think it's last December by my chief and collaborators. They have made an analysis for the LCWW scaling, try to identify the Hexis signals due to the spin one W prime contribution. One of the major advantage to do the WW scaling rather than the dual yen, because in LC you can do the dual yen production of the W prime by couple the W prime Z prime to the fermion for the two quarks. But that is more model independent because it depends on the fermion coupled to the gauge boson. But for the WW scaling, it's purely the gauge sector. Essentially, you will test how the unitary restoration is realized. So the simplest way is that they impose the sum rule for the E square cancellation, and E force cancellation is readily realized actually in any non-abelian gauge theory, consistent non-abelian gauge theory. But then you impose the sum rule for the E square cancellation, and you set the MW1 to be 700 T, sorry, GeV, apologize, GeV, G. So 0.7 TeV. With that, so the peak is getting hit, okay, so 700 GeV. You can calculate the cross section for the W1 production with the, actually they consider the WZ channel with the internal S channel W1 plus minus. This is the production cross section for the PP bar go to W plus minus 1 and anything else in terms of Fentel bar. And this is the mass of the W1. The environment mass distribution they found is quite encouraging with 300 inverse Fentel bar. That's what they found getting here. And the width is quite narrow because in this case they assume the W1 only does not couple to fermion. and therefore the W1 can only decay to the light WZ, the standard model WZ. So this is the standard model background, and this is some other unitarization. Yes. Right.
So you can, if you consider the pure electronic voltage is low, the processing will go down for all the
semantics. Yeah, my impression, you say that they haven't included the lepton nickel cable.
I think so.
My impression is they
are. Look at
this 100.
Very huge.
Very huge. But there's a peak. This is the peak area, and this is the standard model part, and this is environment mass distribution one per 100 GeV. This is events, but if you look at here, it's about like 70 or 60 events given here, but include 300 in most bento. You think they haven't? I think probably it's up right. So in fact, Zhang Bing and you we have. Did a lot of calculation for those. It's straightforward to include that in our calculation for analysis for like for the dub, for the anomalous Higgs coupling, because there you just replaced the Higgs is being one state by W prime or Z prime. The calculation technical is essentially the same. So those guys essentially also extending the early results by Bag and CP and Taohan and so on. Those are straightforward, but it's very striking futures, which you would expect is unique futures, relatively model independent, which you can identify at the LHC in comparison with other models like a standard model or Suzy Higgs. Just 2 months ago, another a physicist he's a postdoc in Germany. He rushed out to start a foresight model. Actually, I probably want to comment. I missed one transparency. So this is the foresight model we did a few months ago. It's minimum delocalization, and this is some explicit results show you how the mass spectrum can be realized. Say for example, Z1 and W1 in C2 is line 70 about 1 TeV. This is about 900 TeV. This is also around the same. And with some different inputs for those F and T, this is a very small minimum Moose model, so you can do some exact numerical calculation. And the prediction for S hat in C2, for example, is indeed consistent with the precision constraint, and the C3 is not so good. So this physicist, theorist, go ahead to use all this model and with that input. And he analyzed for the including the fermion, because we do have fermion delocalized here. He did a calculation for cross section for the WW go to TT bar in that minimum model. So we have the T roughly about the same as the experimental result, and the T prime, the T1 about 3 TeV. Remember in my yesterday talk, for the WW go to TT bar or TT bar go to WW, the intuitive violation occurs at 3.5 TeV. So this is still below that unitarity violation, and my help to unitarize through, I think in this case, it's only through T channel. So really the S channel case for the scaling like this, you would have for the WW, then you need a T channel of B. That's the KK mode of the B. And sorry, this is the B2. So these two are more or less degenerate, and this is lighter. So now what he did is a calculation of the cross section for the Z1 to be 700 GeV and the B prime to be 2.5, sorry, TeV, apologies. So you see the standard model without hex, this is the total cross section. So the unitarity bound goes like 4 pi over S. So the standard model, the Higgs-less standard model is the line given here. Okay, so it's certainly slower than the unitarity bound. We'll violate unitarity at about 3 TeV or so around here. So the unitarity bound goes like that, 4 pi over s. And then you have a standard model with a 500 TeV a Higgs boson. So it's given here, it's unitarized, you see, satisfying unitarity bound. And then you have the Higgs-less model, that's the full red line, solid red line, is given here. And now you have the peak given here. Because you have the B1, have the Z, because you have the TT bar go to the Z prime and split, WW go to Z prime split into TT bar. So that also helped to unitarize and then you are taking out the T channel B prime. So now you can see that in the fermion case, how also the unitarity delay. This is the cross section calculation. This is just the platonic cross section. WW go to TT bar. It's not the event race, right? It's the platonic cross section. So you can convolute with the Platon distribution and with some cars probably. You want to suppress background. So as I remember in the LC, the standard model TT bar product in the background is too large. But now you have Brisbane peak, so there should be, and also at linear collider, you reach the scale of the TeV collider energy. Somehow interesting. So if you go to linear collider, you might encounter the situation that the Z prime W prime might be above your linear collider energy regime, the energy collider energy, the central mass energy. Say you start with 500 TeV or 800 TeV and gradually goes up to 1 TeV or 1.5 TeV. And probably the first situation where we encounter is still a Higgs-less effective low energy theory after you integrate out those heavy states. And therefore, all the new physics, yesterday I mentioned two, L0 and L1, that's T and S prime for precision data. But now the L4 and L5 will give you the anomalous 4W. Gauge coupling, which will contribute to the WW scaling. That's a more likely situation for the linear collider because you don't have enough central mass energy. But linear collider have much more clean background, so you might be able to have a help to probe those. So this is from the relevance of an early study we did with Tao Han and CP. We consider, for example, triple gauge boson plug production at linear collider with some polarization and so on. Here is the process for E plus E minus go to WWZ, and which impose a bond. If I remember correctly, the luminosity is 500 inverse pentobar or 200. I don't quite recall. So now with the polarization, we show that the polarized electron beam and especially electron and possibly somewhat polarization for the E plus can greatly increase the sensitivity on the bond for the L4 and the L5. So the two operators, because they contribute to the gauge coupling there. So essentially, you have a E plus E minus go to Z, and Z split into WW and Z. And this the bound is much weaker for the 3Z case, but this is much better. So now the question is whether you can reach enough sensitivity to really bound the size of L4 and L5 from the Higgs-less model. Another diagram. Roughly assume if you just do the E plus E minus for the WW, really WW scaling with the sub process of WW go to WW or ZZ as a linear collider, this is 1.6 TeV linear collider with 200 inverse pentobar. The case I showed here is different, the bound on a different final state. This is new bar W plus, W minus. this is this green, and the yellow one is new ZZ final state. The dotted line, the dashed line, the new ZZ, and the yellow range, I think is line 5 confidence level contour for the new bar W minus W plus final state. So we have three channels, and if you combine them together, it's a range where you like to confine. So here is an illustration on what type of the new physics, which gives you the different pattern of the of the prediction, some point predicted by, because each new physics model gives you a prediction for L4 and L5, and which is one point on this plane. And now we have, this is my old plot, so I shoot here for the vector type. So it's along this direction, so some point here depends on the actual size, because we haven't analyzed any particular model there. But it's along this direction, which means the L4, alpha 4, alpha 5 has a different sign. So L4 is positive and L5 is negative. And now I take this random standard model, some work in progress, did a straightforward calculation by integrate out the W point and Z point, and you get this is result, and indeed it falls into this pattern. And the B is the warped factor, which formulated in the deconstructing, which has a size, which is essentially the log of the NUV scale divided by TUV scale. So it's about 50 to 60 size. So if the G square is about 0.4, so you have 6 times that value. So it's about 200 to 300 inverse, but now times multiplied by this factor. So converged to the bound given here. So it's non-trivial. I last slide I did some numerical analysis here. For example, if we take lambda to be 3 TeV. So this is 1 over 16 pi squared. Multiply this. So 1 over 16 pi squared is about 160. And divided by 200 to 300. So it's below, it's in this range, and might be sensitive. And then the goal of the linear collider is you want to probe, measure those precision parameters, those anomalous coupling parameters as precise as possible. And many studies were desirable phenomenological analysis. So finally, I move to an overall summary to all the 4 lectures I have. So I like to recall, yesterday I mentioned, so far the experimental fact is that the existing experiments have found all the standard model particles, Gauge bosons and fermions, except a spin 1 Higgs boson. And that Higgs boson is unnatural for many reasons, like fine-tuning duality and arbitrary Yukawa couplings and masses. And the fact is that the experiments so far only verified the Higgs standard model, the 4D Higgs standard model. And without that Higgs boson, fundamental Higgs boson, we just put in all the masses by hand in the standard model Lagrangian. And it's interesting to notice that such the four-dimensional Higgs standard model does respect the four standard model electroweak gauge symmetry in the nonlinear realization, and can be okay with precision data with only 2 parameters compared with the standard model with 1 free parameter given here in the electroweak sector, symmetry breaking sector. Now the real problem is that with such the Higgs standard model, how would you understand why all those quark and lepton masses are so different, and why the neutrino masses are so tiny? And in the lecture 1, I gave you a model-independent analysis about this on the scale, from the unitary analysis on the scale of the new physics for the mass generation for all the standard model fermions, and also gauge bosons. Now, another real problem is how, in such the Higgs model, how would you be able to have a sensible theory which is perturbative and consistent up to a scale? Usually, such Higgs theory is no longer sensible at the scale of the unitary violation scale, I call E star. But this E star is 1.2 TeV in a Higgs-based standard model, in the usual Higgs-based standard model. So how would we be able to delay this unitary violation and to achieve the sensible perturbative theory up to, say, 3 to 10 TeV, which will cover the OHC and the collider energy regime and also maintain a more sensible effective theory up to the effective cutoff. And through a minimum modification, and Higgs's standard model and the Higgs's model in general provides such the minimum modification by adding a spin 1 state to unitarize the electroweak centrifugal sector, the WW scaling. And also the geometrical Higgs mechanism and the KK equivalent theorem and the general mechanism for the energy cancellation, that's lecture 2 and 3. And then I showed you in my previous lecture, the third lecture, that all the Higgs, in all the Higgs theories, the generic futures can be formulated through the deconstruction. And that gives us the general classification and understanding of the 5D gauge symmetry breaking and the consistent boundary conditions. And also I showed you in early part of this lecture is the electroweak corrections and is consistent with precision data. The localized fermion compared with the delocalization and with the minimum delocalization and the precision data can be accommodated. And so therefore with this in mind, we can have the perturbative theory up to a much higher scale, a delayed unitary violation scale, as our UV cutoff. And that is unitarized over the whole range of the LHC and the linear collider in the regime. And the striking unique new signal is the spin 1 KK state. Thank you.
Yeah.